As we've discussed with Mark Bittman, throwing a dinner party or going to one can be a wonderful way to spend time with close friends or meet new ones while enjoying a delicious meal, but they can also be full of sticky social situations for host and guest alike. Joining us now with some advice on how to handle everything from what to bring to how to handle an inebriated dinner companion is Philip Galanis. He writes the Social Cues column in the Sunday Style section of the New York Times. He's the author of Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. I'm very pleased always to have Philip on the show. And if you have a question or a disaster, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692. Can write us on our show page or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Philip, do you get a lot of questions about entertaining for your column?
It's funny. In preparing to come in today, I have a huge thousands and thousands of questions, and I typed in dinner party as a search term, and hundreds came up. And as I looked at the first 50 or 60, more of them boiled down to there were two types, basically. There's the control type. My guest is too controlling. The host is too controlling. And then there are the catastrophe types. That when I played it all the veal paillard, I walked into the kitchen and I saw my cat walking over every single plate. What should I do?
Not tell the guests.
Exactly. And hope no one has a cat allergy.
Do they know what goes on in kitchen in restaurant kitchens?
I'm sure they do. I'm sure
they drop on the floor and they get put back on the plate.
Exactly. But the control issues were more interesting. And I heard you were sort of getting to starting to go there with Mark Bittman.
I didn't want to go too far because I knew you were
coming. Well, I appreciate it. I'd hate to be put out of a job. People saying, I'm a vegan and I refuse to go to a dinner if there's going to be meat on the table, which I find, you know, certainly her prerogative, but I find that way too controlling. And there are hosts who give themselves nervous breakdowns by trying to accommodate every single dietary restriction, which I heard Mark saying he finds a challenge. I would find that a gigantic pain in the neck and wouldn't begin to do it.
And then there are hosts who perhaps in AA and are uncomfortable around people drinking. Do they have to tell people when they send out their invitations, this will be a non-alcoholic party?
Well, I'm rarely inviting people whom I don't know pretty well. So I would think if I were an alcoholic that people would coming over would know. But, you know, if you were uncomfortable having alcohol, I think you probably could probably just say this is going to be a dry party, you know, a dry dinner. And people, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if people gave you a hard time because there's really a war going on about who is in charge here. And I think it's one of the biggest barriers to people just having fun.
And it leads to so many sticky situations. For example, with invitations. If someone is single, they receive an invitation from a friend, they're not always sure whether it's a plus one. Is there a graceful way to ask the host whether the invitation includes bringing somebody?
I think if you are single and you have someone you want to bring and you get an invitation, I mean, usually when I get an invitation, it's pretty clear whether it's for me or for me and my partner. And so I just roll with it. But if you're confused, I think I think that asking an honest question is never a problem.
Well, there are other problems sometimes. For example, you really like this person, but you don't like the person they're with. Or there is a space issue, but let's say it's their loved one, for whatever reason love this person, gets into a lot of arguments, has ruined a couple of parties in the past. Do you just simply not invite them because it's going to embarrass everybody?
It's very, very hard to do that because it ends up hurting people's feelings, you know, tremendously. Not including someone's significant other is not an easy thing to pull off. I wouldn't know how to do it. I would sooner not invite the significant other's lovely husband or wife partner than somehow try to say, you must not bring This is for you, not for her, or not for him. Mm. That's a tough.
Especially if you're letting other people bring their significant other.
Yeah, yeah. I have gotten a number of questions where people say, throwing a dinner is not an easy thing. As a number of your callers have already said, it's a little stressful because we're not used to cooking for 10 people. And a number of letters where people say, I'm going to have my brother, his wife, and their 13-year-old son. Can I bring them, to your dinner? Well, no. Three extra – when you've been invited, asking to bring three guests.
My parents are in town right now.
That's even worse. Like my mother's in town, and she doesn't like salty language. So can I bring her? No. No, you may not.
As a guest, when should you mention your dietary restrictions or allergies? And a listener on Twitter says, should you tell the guests the menu in advance to warn them?
Well, if we were talking about a trip across sub-Saharan Africa together, I would say, yeah, you should say for 3 weeks there's going to be this, 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 and this. We're talking about a 2 or 3 hour experience, and I don't know a dinner party where a green salad isn't on the menu. And so I think when I've been on very restrictive weight loss diets, which have never worked for a second, I just go and I roll with it. If I'm not eating meat and meat served, I eat around it. If there's a fish that I hate, I just double down on the grilled asparagus. And I'm not terribly sympathetic with dietary restrictions at a dinner party. I'm very sympathetic with dietary restrictions and allergies, but come on, we're talking about one evening.
Well, a listener does ask about what our responsibility is for catering to unexpected guests, where she threw a dinner party served buffet style, centered around a big cut of meat, and a guest brought a friend who was a vegetarian. Judy wound up making a salad for the woman, but it was an inconvenience.
Absolutely an inconvenience. I mean, but I think it's an odd dinner. She's not going to just serve a huge pork loin. There are going to be vegetables, and I would think there would be something, and bread, and something that a vegetarian would be able to get through without being admitted to a hospital for starvation.
Restaurants point out that no matter what they serve, they can always serve a vegetarian, although not always a vegan. Which is a whole other issue. Anna in Manhattan left this question on her show page. What should a host do when guests arrive early to a dinner? I recently had some guests arrive an hour early for a dinner I was hosting to avoid them waiting 2 hours for dinner. I had to scrap my planned appetizers and move on to cooking the main meal. Should I have continued my plan even though it would have meant a 2-hour wait for the main course?
Well, I guess if it's just those two people, then I think that what she did probably makes sense. And some of us are so uncomfortable inconveniencing other people. So when people turn up early, we somehow make it our problem as opposed to their problem. In that particular case, if I had other guests coming, I would have stuck them in the study with the New York Times and I would have said, here, can I get you a drink? I'm just seeing to the meal, and I'll be out soon.
Because the other people are going to show up, you don't want to have the food on the table when they arrive.
It's really, I think, that moment when that's when the dinner party really, it doesn't come together then, but that's when it starts to come together, when you introduce all the people to each other and give them a chance to talk over a drink, or alcoholic or not, or a glass of wine, and cutting all that short because somebody's turned up an hour early seems like a bad idea for the party.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also write us on our show page, as a number of people have, or on Facebook or Twitter. In fact, Bruce left this question on our show page. He said, my friend always wants to bring her dog along when we have her over for dinner and then wants to feed her dog some of the food we've cooked for her. I'd rather not allow that. What do you think is an appropriate response?
I think it's your house, Bruce. I think it's entirely appropriate for you to say, you know something? Why don't you leave the dog at home and we'll see her and you and her in the park next weekend. It's your house.
And I'll bring some leftovers from this dinner party to the park.
Exactly. But, I mean, I'm assuming we're not talking about a service animal. I'm assuming we're talking about just a lady who's really attached to her dog and wants to bring it around.
I see those people all the time. They have their dogs in little bags sometimes on the subway.
I sat next to a lady with a little dog on the subway coming down here.
Christine in Westchester asked this question on our show page. What are good hostess gifts to bring? Most hosts have planned the meal, so unless I have pre-planned with them, I don't bring food. Wine seems kind of tired. Often, in fact, as we talked about with Mark Bittman, people, even if they do bring wine, they expect you to serve it, even if it isn't really something that goes well with the meal.
Well, and sometimes they demand it. Sometimes they will not rest until you open that blasted bottle of wine. And that's one of those situations where we're talking about who's in charge. Now, if you're enough of an enophile or a foodie that it's going to give you a nervous breakdown to open a certain bottle of wine with your roast, then I think it's your prerogative as host to say thank you so much. We are going to enjoy this together the next time you come over. Or if you're like me and you don't really care so much, I just open it just to keep them quiet.
Well, but you can open it and serve them that wine and serve everybody else the wine you were planning.
I mean, people take wine. We've become so much more expert about food and drink than we used to be when I grew up, and nobody cared about things like wine pairings, or if people did, they were much fancier than people that I knew. So, but now everybody's got an opinion about a pairing and a this and a that.
We're going to be talking about wine pairings in our next hour.
I don't doubt it.
My guest is Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column for the Sunday Style section of the New York Times. His book is called Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. And we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on our Facebook page, or you can Twitter us. Our handle is at Twitter. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate.
It certainly
showing
is.
My age.
No, you are not. You just got a teeny bit tongue-tied, and you fixed yourself before anybody had the chance to complain.
We're back with Philip Galanis. He writes a Social Cues column for the Sunday Style section of the New York Times, and he has also put together some of the best in a book called Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. You've received so many letters since. I imagine there are probably six more books in the works.
There could be 106 more books in the work, and it's really funny. Just when I think I've gotten to the epitome of people's awkwardness, they can surprise me by coming up with more.
We have a lot of people writing in. Beth in Brooklyn says, "What do you do when a dinner party guest, a good friend, drinks too much and then locks himself or herself, I don't know what it is, in the WC right off the dining room and then takes ill, throwing up for a half hour? This recently happened to me. No one noticed the guest was going over capacity until too late. It was really embarrassing for me as the host."
Yeah, I can understand that. It's a terrible moment because when you're the host, you are sort of in charge. So when I'm having dinners, I'm constantly looking around the table and seeing if people are holding their liquor okay. I mean, unfortunately, there's not much you can do once they're being sick, Paige. But before that, let's say this ever happens to you again, don't be shy about taking them by the arm and taking them into another room so you're not doing it publicly, because that would be really shaming of them. But if you could take them into your bedroom or a study and say, let's slow down because you're going too hard here.
Oh, sometimes people drink too much and just become unruly, although they don't always have to drink to become unruly.
Well, that's true.
If you're offended by something that someone says, should you necessarily say something or in response to or do you just simply ignore it and let the other dinner guests take care of it?
Well, I think there's a line. that you beyond which you cannot go. So if someone is saying something that I'd simply disagree with, as the host, I might, you know, back off. But when someone says something and let the party happen, and maybe another guest will take it up. But then there are times when people will make sexist or racist or homophobic comments. I just got a tweet about it where someone said that there was a conversational bomb that went off at their dinner party when somebody talked about, quote, that blacko in the White House. Now, when somebody...
I hope this was not her best friend.
I hope so, too, because she'd be short a best friend. But that's the kind of thing where, as the host, I think we do have a responsibility to speak up, because other guests might be shy because it's not their party, and I think you don't want it. You don't want people to feel like in your house that's the kind of place where people can say that kind of thing.
We have a bunch of calls coming in from people who have food concerns. Maureen, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is about allergies, and I have my nut allergy is not that severe, but I would like you to – I was wondering if you could address both when someone has an allergy that isn't that severe, where maybe you can either pick around or just choose another dish. Or when people have a really severe allergy, like, for example, if someone were to prepare something with peanuts and therefore everything in the kitchen is untouchable. Like, I have some friends where if they smell peanuts, they're going to have to get that EpiPen out.
And anaphylaxis,
I've been in some cases where I went to a wedding shower, for example, and somehow they managed to make all the dishes with nuts in them, and I had to eat bread without insulting the host, and I could see her mother looking at me, and I just didn't think to say no nuts, because it was like, well, how could you make every single dish?
And you're not alone. Karen on Twitter wrote, I have allergies. If attending, I don't want to inconvenience my hosts in their cooking choices, but I don't want to die either.
Well, that's
also an EpiPen will really ruin a party.
That's absolutely true. And when Leonard and I were talking about preferences and diets earlier, a big exception to that is something that's going to make you sick. And I think you're always better off in that case. I mean, especially with a severe allergy, to put your hosts on notice and they can, so that they can do, they can take whatever precaution they need to take, depending on the severity of your of your condition.
Thank you.
So, how do I gracefully, if they've already prepared the food and I'm in a situation?
Well, see, that's the thing. But you're not going to be. I don't want you to get into the situation where they've already prepared you. When Leonard invites me to his house, the day he invites
if and
me,
when that ever
oh,
happens.
That's how I feel it happening. I feel us growing to that. I'm going to call him up and say that day I get the email or the engraved invitation in the mail. I'm going to say, Leonard, just for you to know, I am severely allergic to nuts. So if there's anything you can do to help me out there, or, and this is very unpopular with people, but I like this advice, just so you're not creating more work for Leonard, who might not be used to cooking for 20, say, or if you'd like me to bring something that I can eat and that you could plate and serve to me, I'm down with that too.
Oh, I like that one. Okay, great.
That way you're not being too demanding.
People forget that things like pesto have nuts in them.
Oh, they sure do.
A number of listeners have written in with similar problems. Lisa in Forest Hill says, I love entertaining, but my husband always comes up with a reason not to do it. I do all the cooking and cleaning to keep him happy, but he still prefers not to. Any suggestions on how to engage him? And then Tony wrote on our show page, how do you respond to invitations when you know your spouse isn't going to want to go?
Well, those are both really good. Now, if in the first case, if it's because he is shy, if he's just a really shy person and doesn't feel comfortable, that's the kind of thing where I think by starting with, you know, maybe one other couple, so it's you and one other couple, and sort of grow him into the idea of having people around, that is, you know, that's one way to do it. Another way to think of this is if he doesn't like, for instance, staying up until, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night and wants to go to bed earlier, then you can arrange parties that might – you can arrange to have people over for a drink or a a drinks party instead of a big dinner, something that whatever is going to his issue is, we can fix. We can find a way to get to baby step him into it.
But let's say everybody loves to do it. But then how do you gracefully draw the evening to a close? Do you just simply have to wait out your guests? Can you start loading dishes into the dishwasher as a hint that it's gotten late, or start yawning a lot?
I think the most graceful thing I have ever seen was at a dinner on the Upper East Side where a very fancy lady stood up at around, 10:30, and the party didn't feel like it was over at all to me. She was doing a great job hostessing. And she stood up and said, I want to thank you all so much for coming. And she said it with the most sincere, incredible-looking smile on her face that we all understood we had been dismissed. But it somehow didn't feel bad because it was coming with a compliment. She said, I can't tell you the last time this room has heard so many interesting stories and la, 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 la. So she kissed us as she was kicking us out the door.
Let's say you're one of a group of friends and you always seem to be throwing dinner parties and you have friends who don't. Can you suggest to them that it's their turn?
Yeah. Reciprocity gets to be something that really grates on the nerves of frequent dinner hosts. And I think it's because I think a lot of people don't reciprocate because it is really, really stressful. And when you understand that about people, I think it is better simply to pare back the number of times you invite them rather than make a stink with them and tell them what you want them to do in terms of hosting.
John, you have to ask this very quickly because we're pretty much out of time, but I thought it was important because I've been there. Hi, John. Oh, Jane. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, hi. We live in Westchester and we entertain pretty often with mostly our friends from the city that come out here on the train. And my husband and I have frequently said, which train do you want to catch back tonight? And many times they'll say, oh, we don't care, whatever. But the problem is, as the night gets later, the trains only run once an hour. So we find that we're looking across the table at each other thinking, oh my gosh, if they don't leave in 5 minutes,
it's
here
12
for another
o'clock.
Hour.
I think you become the master choreographer and you realize you're in charge of it. And if you want them on the 10 o'clock train at 9:30, you start saying, this has been so much fun. It is killing me that I have to bring you back to the train for the 10 o'clock. So next time, let's all pack pajamas so we can keep this party going all night long.
Just one more thing. Should guests always write a thank you note? Is an email or a phone text okay?
I always write a thank you note because I want to be invited back again. And I think that emails tend to have, if you know how hard somebody's worked to prepare a meal, you know that writing a thank you note and slapping a stamp on it is practically nothing. And emails can feel a little lame, a little like, it was
text is even less so.
Texts even less so to really thank people for the amount of work they've done.
On the other hand, if you don't want to be invited back, you don't say anything.
Exactly.
The meal was terrible.
That is, again,
you push your food across the plate.
You've come up with a brilliant strategy.
Philip Galanis is the columnist at the New York Times on the Social Cues column. His book, Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. So it was a pleasure having you on our show. And you can
always
come back anytime.
Thank you so much. I'll take you up on that.